Krishna. So how is the rain treating you? Yeah, it's quite untimely. At this time of the year, generally you don't get any rain. But weather is changing. It's due to sinful activities that weather changes. When people become sinful, then, yeah, this is what happens. Climatic disorder. The climates become erratic. Anyway, what to do? And does everybody have umbrella? How many of you do not have umbrella? So maybe we can set up an umbrella shop. Sell it at no profit, no loss basis. Anyway, make arrangements that everybody gets umbrella. You can either buy it from the market yourselves, or maybe organizers can arrange something. So, yeah, I think the best will be those who want an umbrella, just give your name and we'll arrange it. We'll buy it in wholesale and provide it for you. Actually, it's important, it's essential that you have an umbrella now. So, otherwise, how is everyone feeling? Okay. Do you have comfortable arrangement for sleeping? Do you have comfortable arrangement for eating? So this response was more enthusiastic. So that probably indicates that the prasadam is very nice. Of course, prasadam is always nice. Krishna prasad, what can be? Who can ever complain? And this morning I was reflecting on my classes, especially yesterday's class. And I was wondering whether I'm making the householders uncomfortable. Please remember that is not at all the intention. I do not want anyone to feel guilty or embarrassed. In Krishna consciousness, everyone has his appropriate situation. Because ultimately, we are neither householders or sannyasi or brahmachari or vanaprastha. We are neither brahmana or kshatriya or vaishya or sudra. Our identity here is gopi bhartto padukamalayo dasho anudasho dasho smi. It is not that sannyasa situation is ideal or householder situation is not ideal. Actually, in this material nature, nobody's situation is ideal. Until and unless we become situated in Krishna consciousness, we all are in embarrassing situation. And the thing that we should remember is that these instructions that Krishna is giving to Uddhav, because Krishna is asking Uddhav to take sannyas. That's why these instructions are pertaining to sannyas order. And when one becomes a sannyasi, he should be beyond household situation, beyond any materially comfortable situation. Actually, material situation means maya. Let us try to see the whole picture. What actually happens? Material nature is Krishna's external energy. Material nature is Krishna's external energy. And Krishna's external energy is meant for taking away from Krishna and forget Krishna, make one forget Krishna. Avaranatmika and Bikshepatmika. Avaranatmika, covering material nature, illusory energy of the Lord, which is called Maya. Maya's business is to cover us. What is the covering with? The covering of ignorance. Avaranatmika. And Bikshepatmika. Throw away. Throw us away from Krishna. That is Maya's business. And what actually happens in the material nature? One set of living entity get a male body, and another set of living entities get a female body. And they develop the attraction for each other. So that is the business of this material nature. It is, and the thing is that it's changing. The role is changing. Like one who has a male body now, in the next life, most probably, most likely, he'll get a female body. And one who is in a female body, in next life, she will get a male body. And this is how it is happening. The attachment is causing one to come back time and time and time again into this world of birth and death. Therefore, it is important that we recognize this crucial fact. Attraction for the opposite sex is the main business of the illusory energy. And that's how living entities are tied down to this material nature. Material nature has been considered to be Maithunagara. Material nature is a prison house. And what kind of prison house? The prison house of sex desire. Normally, prison means one has to be tied down. One has to be imprisoned. One has to be tied down. Yes, must fly is kind of bothering. So, can somebody get a fan? Just hand fan. So, in prison, one has to be imprisoned, meaning kept in there. So how is the prisoner kept in the prison house? He's tied down with a chain. He's bound with a chain. And the prison house has high walls so that no one can cross that. Or some prison has moat, like water around. In America, there is a very famous prison called Alcatraz. It is in the middle of the ocean, just a small island, and that's prison, so that the prisoners can't escape. Similarly, the material nature is a prison house. And like all around this has an ocean, causal ocean. And beyond the causal ocean, there's glaring light. So even if you cross the ocean, there's a light which will blind you. You'll be completely bewildered. You know what to do, where to go. That is called Brahma Jyoti. So when one goes to Brahma Jyoti, he gets stuck there. Even they go out of material nature. Even they go out of the causal ocean, they get stuck in Brahma Jyoti. So the only way out of this prison is actually Krishna's lotus feet. That is beyond the walls of the material nature, beyond the ocean, causal ocean, beyond Brahma Jyoti. And that is Krishna's lotus feet. When you go there, then we get perfectly situated. Hari Bol, neither fan nor chamara, just hand fan. Because they are for Krishna, they are not for others. And still, you know, very, very serious criminals are bound by a chain in spite of being in such a situation. They are bound. And the binding factor in the material nature, the chain that ties everyone down to the material nature is sex desire. Sex desire. Whether one is a human being or an animal or an insect, everyone is tied down here with the sex desire. That is why there is so much importance, so much emphasis to conquer sex desire. And the only way to conquer sex desire is by getting the higher taste, by developing our relationship with Krishna, loving relationship with Krishna. Because what one wants to get out of sexual relationship, the relationship with Krishna gives us a kind of a pleasure, a joy, which is million times, billion times, trillion times more relishable than that relationship. That is why time and time again it has been pointed out that Krishna consciousness, devotional service is the only way. So these are the subject that we must understand in Krishna consciousness. It is not that we to become Krishna conscious or to come to take to spiritual life, one has to become a woman hater. It happens sometimes. And I heard that in the early days of ISKCON that some individuals in a leading position developed that kind of attitude. And as a result of that, many women had been hurt. Women devotees had been hurt. Naturally. There shouldn't be any such discrimination. If there is any family, in a family, does the brothers hate the sisters or denigrate them? Oh, you are a woman, you are third class, or you are... No. When we have a loving relationship, then there is proper understanding of relationship, a feeling of relationship. So we are related to each other. Even if we are in the human body, even if we are in a male and female body, in Krishna consciousness, our attitude should be like brothers and sisters, mothers and children. And sometimes it goes to another extreme. Sometimes another kind of tendency that is becoming manifest in our dealings I am seeing, that some women hate to be called as a mother. To be addressed as a mother is the highest form of respect. But they don't like to be called as mother. So anyway, we have to transcend those platforms of misconception and come to the proper understanding. You can fan a little and then stop. Just get the flies out. You don't need to continuously fan me. And just from sitting there, you can, from time to time, you just do that. So I just wanted to, because I was reflecting on this in the morning about yesterday's class, I was thinking, it also happened because when I was just going out after yesterday's class, evening class, one couple, disciple of mine, they came to me, they were waiting there, and they told me that it was their wedding anniversary yesterday. So I wished them well, naturally, and I wished many happy Krishna conscious return of this day. And the wife was feeling, the female disciple of mine, was feeling a little embarrassed, and he said, "It has been too late that he met me, otherwise he would have been better off." And I was thinking that, I was telling him, no, there's no need to feel like that. As householders, you continue your Krishna consciousness, make your house into a temple. So that is the responsibility that the householders have. Make your house into a temple. And consider those who are in that house, they are devotees of Krishna. That is how we actually make a positive outcome of that situation. So anyway, and this morning also I was reflecting on that, and I thought that I would clarify that point. Like, wherever we are, sthane sthitva shruti gatam, wherever we are situated, we should simply become engaged in serving Krishna. So, okay, so now let's go into Uddhav Gita. So this is the 11th chapter of the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. This chapter is entitled as "The Symptoms of Conditioned and Liberated Living Entities." Condition means those who are bound in this material nature, and liberated means those who are not bound in this material nature. So, in this chapter, Krishna is describing to Uddhav the difference between conditioned soul and liberated soul. Actually, in the previous chapter, Uddhav asked Krishna the same question. What is the difference, or what are the characteristics of conditioned souls and liberated souls? Just as in Bhagavad Gita also, in the second chapter, towards the end, Arjuna asked Krishna, Sita Pragyasya Ka Bhasha, what is the symptom of a sthita pragya, a person who has been properly situated in transcendental knowledge, who has become fixed up in transcendental knowledge. So in Arjuna, Krishna described what are the symptoms, what are the characteristics. And here also Uddhava asked a similar question. What are the characteristics of a liberated soul and conditioned soul? And in response to that, Krishna is actually answering. And the first thing Krishna points out, that because the living entity although is a spiritual being, but because it's so minute, it is susceptible to fall from the spiritual sky. And in that respect, there is an example, like a spark of a fire. The trouble is troubling just a little bit, and now I can sit down. So, okay. Okay, boshe boshe nakte paro. So, like a spark. Spark is fire, but the spark is very small fire. And that's why when the spark comes out of the fire, it loses its fiery qualities. Coming out of the fire, the spark loses the fiery quality. And next to the fire, what is next to the fire? It's ash. And falling on a heap of ash, that tiny little spark that it was, it loses its fiery quality and becomes ash. And it identifies itself with the ash. So similarly, the living entities, because it is minute, when it comes out of Krishna's internal potency, it loses the spiritual qualities. And next to spiritual internal potency is Krishna's external potency, material nature. And falling in the material nature, it tries to identify itself with matter, like with us. We are spiritual beings, but falling in the material nature, we are thinking that we are matter, meaning we are this body made of matter, identifying ourselves with matter. See the example? Does it make sense? The spark is fire, but because it became separated from the source of fire, it loses its fiery qualities because it's infinitesimal, very minute, very small. It loses the fiery quality. And next to the fire is ash. Falling in the ash, it becomes ash. Similarly, losing our spiritual qualities, because we become separated from Krishna, we fall in the material nature and we identify ourselves with matter. we identify ourselves with the body. So, and that is the meaning of becoming, or that is how a living entity becomes conditioned. Conditioned by matter. Becomes entrapped by matter. And we identify ourselves with matter. So, that is the situation. Now let us go back to the same analogy. The spark became ash. That speck of inflammable object that has become ash now has the ability to become fire again. Isn't it? By nature, it is actually fire. But because it has become separated from fire, it lost its fiery qualities. Now, if he wants to regain its fiery qualities, what should it do? Common sense understanding, go back to the fire. If we take that speck of ash that has become now, if we take it back to the fire, what will happen? Will it remain as ash? Or it will become fire? How many of you think that it will become ash? How many of you think that it will become fire? Okay. I am inspired by the reaction. So, now the same way, a living entity is a spirit soul. But it is due to the illusory energy of the Lord, due to the influence of the illusory energy of the Lord, that we are thinking that we are this body. So now, if we want to regain our spiritual identity, what we have to do? We have to go back to the fire. We have to go back to the spiritual world. Make sense? Now the question is how to go back there. That speck of ash, can it by itself go back to the fire? It needs somebody to do that. Now who is that somebody that takes a conditioned soul back to the spiritual world? A devotee. It's a devotee who actually is able to take the living entity back to its spiritual situation. And that is why association of devotee is so important. To come in contact with a devotee is so important. To listen to the instructions of the devotees and act according to that instruction is so important. Because that is going to take us back to the spiritual world. Therefore, only when one receives the shelter of a pure devotee, he becomes liberated again. So see the difference between conditioning and liberation, conditioned soul, liberation, liberated soul. You turn away from Krishna, you'll become conditioned. You come across a devotee and surrender unto him, he will take you to the spiritual world. So very, very simple analogy. Very simple understanding. So in this way, now Krishna explained how a living entity becomes entangled in this material nature. Just to reiterate that point, in Prema Vivarta, Jagadananda Pandit is describing Krishna bohirmukh hoiya bhogavancha kare nikatastha maya tare japutiya dhare. The moment a living entity turns his face away from Krishna, maya immediately grabs him. And then his condition is like pishachi paile jano motichchanna hoy maya mugdha jiber hoy shebhabo udaye. When one becomes haunted by a ghost, then his activities become completely abnormal, mad, becomes mad. So similarly, when a living entity comes in contact with maya, his condition becomes like mad, like a madman. He doesn't realize what he does. And we notice, after coming into Krishna consciousness, when you look back, recall some of the incidents, some of the situations that we had been in, sometimes the way we behaved becomes so embarrassing. I don't know whether it happens to you, but it happens to me quite often. When I think back, I feel so embarrassed. Oh my God, why did I act like that? Because I was haunted at that time. I was not normal, I was abnormal. Therefore the way I acted, just like a madman, doing things that was totally abnormal, undesirable and so embarrassing. Therefore it is, sometimes often it is, you may say, well, Maharaj, in Ocean of Mercy, you didn't mention anything like that. Well, I didn't mention because I was so embarrassed to mention those incidences. Anyway, the thing is that today at least I have gained my sanity by Prabhupada's mercy. And I would never behave like that. Unless and until I become mad again by the illusory energy of the Lord. Yes, in Krishna consciousness also we act sometimes in certain way. But that may be embarrassing. But at least in Krishna consciousness we know we are doing that for Krishna's sake, not for my sake. Like so often, like yes, when you go to preach, as I was recalling, when you go to preach, sometimes people behave in a very, very undesirable way, unpleasant way. How many of you have your... You went to somebody and just by seeing you, he just shut the door in front of you. Yes. It's an embarrassing situation, but that doesn't embarrass us. We know we just went to benefit him. And the unfortunate soul doesn't recognize that. We have nothing to gain from him. He may be a very rich person. And he may be a very important person. But his condition is not really very nice. So you go to them to give them the proper understanding, proper knowledge. But they don't want to take that. But you know, those situations are not embarrassing because we're doing it for Krishna. But a situation like that, when we're acting on our own false ego, would have been very, very embarrassing and painful. So due to becoming bewildered by false ego, one thinks himself to be an enjoyer and he simply invites all kinds of embarrassing situation for himself, causing misery, confusion, distress, and sometimes happiness and joy. It comes both, but both are actually due to an illusory condition. Just like a drunkard, when he's drunk, sometimes he feels very happy. Most of the time they feel happy, a drunkard. But then afterwards he feels distressed. And then Krishna is advising Uddhava that a living entity in the material body, okay, so there is a difference between condition and liberated. Let us just briefly discuss that. What is the meaning of what actually happens when you become conditioned? To becoming conditioned means we identify ourselves with this body. We think that this body is me. We think this material body is me. But a liberated state means he is in a spiritual body. Just as we have gross body, just as we have a subtle body, similarly we have a spiritual body. And the spiritual body is our real self. And we become entangled in the material nature. When you become entangled in the material nature, we identify our material body to be the self. There are two types of material body: the gross material body and the subtle material body. And the soul is there, but in that state the soul doesn't have a body. His spiritual body is lost. He has become just a tiny spark of spiritual consciousness. And his identity has been, his measurement has been described as 1/10,000th part of the tip of the hair. Keshagra Shatobhagasya Satadha. The tip of the hair is divided into 100, and then the 100th part is divided into another 100. So that is the size of our spiritual body, meaning we completely lost our spiritual body. It is only just a tiny little spiritual spark that is giving out consciousness. So, the living entity, as a tiny little spiritual spark, is there in the body, in the heart, and there is another person that is the super soul, the Jivatma and Paramatma, spirit soul and super soul. So the spirit soul is susceptible to the reactions of his actions. The spirit soul acts and he becomes responsible to the reactions of his actions. Whereas the super soul is not acting. Super soul is just witnessing. So the two souls are there in the body. Spirit soul and super soul. They have also been described as two birds in a tree. One bird is eating the fruits of the tree. The other bird is just watching the other. That fruit-eating bird. That's the super soul. And the super soul is the witness. Super soul is the guide provided. One is willing to listen to him. And super soul is providing the intelligence. Matta smritir gyanam apohanam cha. So this is how the super soul is acting within the living entity, in the body of a living entity. And when you go deeper, then we understand that the super soul is there with the spirit soul, with us, because the super soul is waiting. Super soul is waiting when you're going to turn towards him. That's why Krishna is there in our hearts. We left Krishna, but Krishna didn't leave us. Wherever we are going, Krishna is going with us. And Krishna is waiting. My son, when are you going to turn towards me? When are you going to come back to me? In that respect, often I think of one analogy, one example that I sometimes cite. The child tells the father, "Daddy, Daddy, I want to go and play with my friends." The father says, "Come, I'll take you to the park." So the father brings the son, the child, to the park. And the son, meeting his friends, other children, is so involved in playing with them that he has forgotten the father completely. But although the child has forgotten the father, but the father did not. The child is playing, the father is sitting on a bench by the park. And then at some point, when the child is afraid, it became dark, everyone is gone, then he calls out, "Daddy, Daddy, where are you?" Then the father comes and picks him up and says, "Now let's go home." So in a similar way, when we turn towards Krishna, call out to him, "Krishna, Krishna, where are you?" Then Krishna will pick us up in his on his lap and take us back to Godhead. So that is why Krishna is in our heart as the super soul. He's waiting. That upadrashta anumanta, although Krishna mentioned that in Bhagavad Gita, he's the witness and he is the approver who sanctions. But in reality, Krishna is not there just as a witness. As long as we are forgetful of him, he is a witness. But when you look, when you turn towards him, when you call out to him, he is going to pick us up and take us back to Godhead. Krishna is in our hearts because he wants us to go back to him. He is waiting when we are going to turn towards him. But now, like that child meeting our friends in this park, in this garden of material nature, we are absorbed in a game. We are playing a game called the game of karma. In that game, when you play right, we enjoy. When you play it wrong, we suffer. So it's a game that we are playing. And the goal of the life here is to enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. But what is the right way to get the enjoyment? Play it right, you will enjoy. Those right actions are called piety. And wrong actions are called sin. You enjoy the right way due to your piety, you will enjoy. Due to your wrong actions, due to your sinful activities, you will suffer. But whether enjoying or suffering, we are in this material nature. But when you come across a devotee, then we get to know that enjoyment and suffering of this material nature is not the goal of life. The goal of life is to go back to the spiritual world. Krishna is waiting for us. The devotee tells us, look, your father is sitting there by the bench. Why are you crying? Due to the losses. Why are you crying due to your suffering? Just go to your father. So that is what the devotee does. He takes us by our hand and takes us to Krishna. So, now what about, this is the conditioned soul in this material body. How is the liberated soul in this material body? The liberated soul in the material body is still with his spiritual body. That is called Swarup. So, let us consider, when a person, by practicing Krishna consciousness, becomes purified, he actually attains his spiritual body. Although he is in his gross material body, but in this gross material body, he is a pure spiritual individual. He is not this body. He is in his spiritual identity. And the thing is that he doesn't have a subtle body. His subtle body is gone. The subtle body has dissolved. That's an important consideration to note. Yeah, I'm noticing one thing. I'm giving a seminar, but hardly anyone is taking note. Very few good girls are taking notes. And one or two good boys are taking notes. Okay, many good boys are taking notes. Yes. This is actually regular class. The way you sit in a class, this is something like that. And in a class, you take note. Not only I'll say that, please take note. That means, please take note. The note that one we have to take now is that at the time of death we leave the gross body, but the subtle body remains. At the time of death we don't get rid of the subtle body remains, and it's the subtle body that takes us to the next gross body. The subtle body remains. Subtle body doesn't die. With the gross body, at one time, we just leave the gross body. We are free from the gross body. But still we are not free from the material bondage because the subtle body is there. And subtle body doesn't die. Then, how to get rid of the subtle body? How to get rid of the subtle body's bondage? Good boys and girls, taking note. Subtle body doesn't die. But subtle body dissolves. It dissolves. Like subtle bodies comes consisting of mind, intelligence, and false ego. Right? Subtle body is made of mind, intelligence, and false ego. So, what does mind do? Mind think. Mind thinks. So, when the mind always thinks about Krishna, then is it material or spiritual? This is how the mind becomes spiritualized, by constantly thinking about Krishna. Man manabhava. And in this way, when one becomes engaged in Krishna's service, then he develops his spiritual intelligence. See, mind now has become spiritualized. Now, tesham satata juktanam bhajatang priti purvakam dadami buddhi jogam tam buddhi jogam. Krishna is saying, I give him buddhi yoga, meaning spiritual intelligence. So now intelligence has become spiritualized. And in this way, when one becomes engaged in Krishna's service, then what happens to his false ego? False ego is gone and he has become Jiver Swarup Hai, Krishner Nitya Das. In this way, the living entity becomes Krishna's eternal servant. So, then what happens at that stage? He doesn't have a subtle body. What happened to his subtle body? Any response? What happened to his subtle body? Subtle body has become spiritualized. No subtle body, pure spirit soul. So that stage is called Swarup Siddhi. Swarup Siddhi. He has achieved his spiritual perfection. Swarup. And then, when he dies, now he has become free from the gross body also. And goes back to the spiritual world. That is called Vastu Siddhi. Also, that has been described as Iha Jasya Harir Dasye Karmana Manasa Gira Nikhilashapi Avasthasu Jivan Muktasa Uchate Nikhilashapi Avasthasu. In all condition, all circumstances, he is Jivan Mukta, is a liberated soul. So that is the state of Jivan Mukta stage. Pure spirit, pure soul is in a material body, apparently material body. And that is a pure devotee. So at that point, what happens? And as I described yesterday, Abadhuta stage or Paramahamsa stage. He doesn't have external consciousness. He is not at all concerned about what's happening around him. Whether someone is insulting him, someone is glorifying him, he is totally unperturbed. And that is called the Uttamadhikar platform. But then again, another consideration is that in order to preach, such Uttamadhikari devotees come down to the Madhyamadhikar platform for the sake of preaching. So Krishna is pointing out at that stage what happens, what is his condition like. He's saying, at that stage he doesn't speak uselessly to anyone and does not fix his mind on material things. Rather, he is always merged in meditation upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But in the eyes of the fools, he behaves like a madman. And then Krishna is pointing out that how devotional service is the only way to attain that stage. Nothing else is going to happen. Na sadhaya, extensive studies of scriptures. Na sankhya, na yoga, philosophical speculation, or performance of mystic yoga, yoga siddhi. Nothing of these will work. The only thing that will enable one to go back to the spiritual world is devotion to Krishna, bhakti. And that is why we should try our best to cultivate this bhakti and become properly situated on the platform of devotional service. Then Uddhava asked Krishna again, how to recognize a saintly person? You said he behaves like a madman. Now how do you understand who is mad and who is a Paramahamsa? How do you recognize whether it is sunrise or sunset? It looks alike. A Paramahamsa and a madman or a retarded boy look alike. Like Jara Bharat. Nobody could recognize him, that he was such an exalted saintly person. For many, many years, he was just there, surrounded by his family members. Even his father couldn't recognize him. His father was only lamenting, oh, this boy is not intelligent enough to study the scriptures. His brothers thought that he was just a totally mad person and they cheated him of his share of the father's property. His neighbors were taking advantage of him. This guy does, nobody gives him food. Come Bharat, come here, take some food. The food is there. But before that you have to do all these things. So they would engage him in all kinds of menial service and then give him a handful of food. And Jara Bharat was happy, like a retarded child. So nobody could recognize this. That's why it is very difficult to recognize a pure devotee Vaishnava. When he's in Madhyamadhikar, from his actions we can sometimes recognize him who is exalted and who is not. But when it comes to the Avadhuta stage or Paramahamsa stage, it's very, very difficult to recognize a Vaishnava. So naturally Uddhava asked, how do we recognize such a person? Then he is pointing out, see, how to recognize a Vaishnava. That is how it's coming to. He is merciful. In whichever condition, although he is like a madman, but you'll see that he is merciful. The neighbors of Jarabharat is trying to take undue advantage of him. Jarabharat is not complaining. He's merciful. Oh, you want this? Want me to do this? Okay, I'll do that. Not even that. The dacoits wanted to offer him to Kali in a sacrifice. Oh, you want to offer me? Fine. If that will please you, okay. Offer me to Kali. So these are the characteristics. He is merciful, non-envious, non-possessive. He doesn't possess anything. Truthful, self-controlled, faultless, gentle, clean, helpful to all, peaceful, dependent on Krishna alone, free from lust, devoid of material endeavor, steady in control of six enemies of the mind, moderate in eating, never bewildered, always respectful to others, never desirous of respect for himself, sober, compassionate, friendly, poetic. That will be a difficult one to figure out. Poetic, expert and silent. So, even one is in a kind of hiding himself, a Paramahamsa, but these characteristics will be displayed. So this is how Krishna is pointing out one can recognize a pure devotee. And then Krishna is also mentioning that when one becomes engaged in pure devotional service and achieves that state of pure devotion, then he develops 64 qualities. Kind of activities. So, I won't get into that. So today, I will just leave up to this, and I'll answer a few questions before. Just a few questions I'll answer. Actually, I'm not feeling very well. So that's why I'll end the class a little early today. Bhakta Om Thakkar. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, please accept my most humble obeisances. Thank you so much for the wonderful lecture, how to handle ourselves when we get frustrated while preaching, when we think of giving up preaching, what should we do? Well, consider why you're preaching. Are you preaching for your sense gratification, or you are preaching to benefit others? Why are you preaching? Om Thakkar. Tell me. For sense gratification? Then why are you preaching? To benefit others. Do they need your help? Then why shouldn't you help them? Why should you be frustrated? If somebody doesn't want to listen, don't waste your time with him. But, alright? Like a doctor. Does he go to the patient? Because the patient will tell him, "Oh, Dr. Babu, you are so nice. Please come." Rather, the patient says, "I don't want to take your medicine. It's so bitter. And no injection, come on, I can't take that." Right? But should the doctor stop treating patient because of that? You understand what I'm saying? Okay. Shakshi Madhav Das . What should we do when past life experiences haunt past habits? Give them up. That's the only thing you should do. Don't dwell in the past. Past habits, try to give them up. At least don't break the four regulative principles. Okay? Because the past habits can be so many. We have to work towards conquering them. Dinavatsala Das. Okay. This question is from yesterday's class. You had mentioned that a pure devotee doesn't consider even his spiritual comfort. He is ready to accept all kinds of difficulties for benefiting others. As preachers of Krishna consciousness, we sometimes have this difficulty that we are unable to decide how much we should stretch ourselves for rapid propagation of Krishna consciousness. For example, doing two programs in two different hostels, or to do just once a day and use remaining time for self-study of proper books. Please give us on how to balance self-sadhana. Okay, see, the question begins with that a pure devotee doesn't consider even his spiritual comfort. A pure devotee doesn't. But until you become a pure devotee, you can consider your spiritual comfort. Okay? Like as I was saying, like if certain situation is not really conducive, leave that and go to another situation. Even if you don't feel comfortable in one temple, go to some other temple where you'll feel better. That's what I tell them. That look, if you don't like to be here, go somewhere, but remain in Krishna consciousness. Alright? Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. This is Parama Madhuri Dasi. Parama Madhuri Dasi, okay. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, as you told us in yesterday's class, that ISKCON girls can get married to non-devotee boys and make them devotee, but I have seen that in many cases when devotee girls marry a non-devotee boy, they lose their Krishna consciousness and interest in service. Many times they even stop chanting due to the influence of their husband and family. My question is, how can we take risk of getting married to non-devotee boys? Very good question. It's a Guru Maharaj stumping question. Well, let's consider why it happens. It happens Because the girl is not strong enough and the boy is stronger. Right? If the girl is stronger, then she would say, you do this or forget me. Okay. But otherwise, the girl will say, okay, nice sense gratification. I can indulge, I got married. So whatever my pati guru says, I must follow that. Pati guru says, machli khao, anda khao, thoda daru piyo. So the question is, yeah, it's a risk that one takes, but what can be done? The girls should get married. Girls should get married. And in simple words, we can say, make the best out of a bad bargain. Okay, if they do not want to take to Krishna consciousness, at least I am not going to give up my Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada's sister is an example for that. Prabhupada's sister actually got married to a family that were fish eating. But she never did. She had to cook even for them, but she never. And throughout her life, she remained fixed up like that. She was a very, very wonderful devotee. After all, she is Prabhupada's sister. Alright? Okay. Try to make the best out of a bad bargain. Although I said, chalo hum chalte hain, aisa nahi hona chahiye. No. Once you're married, make your married life a success. Don't break your marriage. But tolerate and continue. Thank you, Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. I'm sorry, I'm ending the class a little early, and I actually wanted to cover a lot more, but I haven't been able to do that. Hopefully in the afternoon session I'll be able to cover more. Gaur Premanande Hari Hari. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Today is Bhadra Purnima, and it has been, I heard, it was being announced. I also gave a message to the devotee community worldwide that it is very important to distribute Srimad Bhagavatam on this Bhadra Purnima day, because distributing Bhagavatam on Bhadra Purnima day enables one to go back to the spiritual world. That has been mentioned in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 13th chapter, 13th verse. You can read that. So, Maharaj was mentioning that 25 Bhagavatam sets have been distributed and he wanted me to sign. So I told him that... Okay, no, I'll do it. No, yesterday I heard the announcement being made that I'll sign. So since you made that announcement, I will stick to their commitment. I will sign. But my question is, only 25 sets. Okay, who didn't take so far? How many of you didn't take? Don't feel shy. How many of you want to go back to Godhead? How many want to take this wonderful qualification, opportunity? How many of you want to take Bhagavatam set? Who hasn't taken so far? Okay, there are so many hands. Give your names and we'll make a concession. If you can't pay in one go, you pay it in 4 installments. So, but take the Bhagavatam. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.